GM Saturn small car plant, General Motors says an announcement on the location will probably come in. For the ABC Information Network, I'm Roger Skibinis.
A good sound is hard to find. You always get the other kind. Yes, your dial is set to the greatest sound yet. 660 on your radio is KFAR in Fairbanks. 'Cause a good sound nowadays is hard to find.
Good morning, friends, and welcome to Meet a Pioneer. Today is May 10th, 1985. I'm Gail Malloy, bringing you this program every Friday morning at 9 o'clock. Meet a Pioneer is sponsored by the Denali Chiropractic Clinic, the Forget-Me-Not Gift Shop, the Riverboat Discovery, Last Frontier Realty, Mount McKinley Mutual Savings Bank, Larson's Fine Jewelry, and Two Rivers Lodge. What you are about to hear was recorded at the Pioneer's home in Fairbanks, Alaska, yesterday, May 9th, 1985. And pleasant good morning to Esther Hall and the others of the Pioneers Home who are listening to this broadcast right now from the Pioneers Home in Fairbanks, Alaska. We begin our program. This is Gail Malloy and Esther Hall. She was born August 31st, 1898. Here's Esther Hall.
I was born at Douglas, Alaska. And then Douglas is just across from Juneau.
So what was your family, what were your parents doing in Douglas at that time?
My father was working in the mills at that big Treadwell mine, that which is supposed to have been the biggest mine in the world. And he was working in the mills. He never worked in the mines. He worked in the mill, he worked in the cyanide plant, and he worked in the refinery where they made gold into bricks. That was his last work there. And he worked many years there.
Where did he come from? How did they happen to get to Douglas?
Well, my father was born in England, and he married my mother in Tacoma. He met her. They belonged to the same lodge, and he married her there, and they moved to Sitka in the very early years, just after the Russians left Sitka. My mother and father lived in Sitka. And I always have to tell this. My mother was given by the merchant, one of the merchants there, a set of dishes that he had made, and they were all views of old Sitka, and that's still in our family, you know.
Was that set of dishes made in Sitka then?
No, they weren't. They were made somewhere else, but the merchant gave them to my mother and father for a wedding gift.
Well, that had to have been like the 1870s or something.
Yeah, they're very, very precious to us. And my daughter-in-law has them in California right now, and I believe her daughter wrote and told me that she was going to take the Sitka dishes now and take care of them.
Gee, what a family heirloom.
Yes, yes. And then my mother and father moved to Douglas, and my father then worked in the mills, and then he worked in the cyanide plant, and then he worked in the refinery where they made the gold into bricks until he retired.
Was your mother a housewife, took care of the family?
Big pardon?
Did your mother take care of the family, or did she work in Douglas?
No, mother never worked. Mm-hmm. She took care of us.
How many were there of you children?
Three. I had a brother. My sister died very young, and then my brother and I. And my brother went in business in Juneau, had a men's furnishing business there for many years until he passed away. Her name was Karen Sather before she was married.
Oh, your mother? Uh-huh. And what was your brother's name?
My brother's name was James Douglas Oliver, and he went by the name of Douglas or Doug. Everybody knew him as Doug Oliver.
Oliver's your maiden name, then?
Oliver was my maiden name.
So, and what's your middle name?
Clara, and I never tell.
Never used it, huh?
I told the world.
Your full name?
My mother's best friend name was Clara, and that's how I happened to inherit the name.
And are you the oldest, youngest, or in the middle?
Big pen.
Were you the oldest, youngest, or in the middle?
I was the middle one. My brother was the older one. I was the oldest one. I was the next one, and my sister was the young one.
And what happened with your sister? Was it illness, or?
She had tuberculosis.
Oh.
But it was after she had children. She went to Seattle, worked in a doctor's office there as a nurse, and then she married, and she died of tuberculosis.
And left little children?
Yes.
Was that during a time when tuberculosis was all over Alaska?
Yes, yes.
Well, you grew up in Douglas, and what was it like growing up there? What was the town like?
Well, it was just like any little town, I guess, you know. And I went to grade school, went through high school there. And I finished high school when I was 16, and then I went out to normal school, the Bellingham Normal School. Spent 2 years there, and then I had a couple of summers at the University of Washington because I was going to finish college that way, but I got married instead, so I never finished college.
But when you went to the normal school, that was enough to get a certificate to teach.
Yeah, that's where they trained you as a teacher.
What were you going to study in college?
Well, I think it would be something concerning psychology or some of that type of thing that had come in. We did have a psychology class at the normal school, but that was when psychology first came in. And this man came from the East and had classes, but none of us understood it, you know. It was just like Greek to us. So I sometimes wonder how I ever passed the thing, because I really didn't understand what psychology was all about. And that's when psychology first came into being, was when I was going to school there.
Huh. How did you happen to go to normal school?
Well, I think for one thing, it was probably because of some teacher I had here. And she, had gone, and that's where she advised me to go.
Mm-hmm. When you were growing up, did you have any particular ambitions of a certain thing you want to do in your life at all, or?
No, I always wanted to be a teacher. When I was a little girl, I'd hurry home and put on a long skirt, and I had some old school books that my father had had, and I'd pretend I had a whole bunch of kids, because the other kids wouldn't play with me, because I had to be the teacher. They couldn't be the teacher. But I'd just pretend, and I'd go home and put my long skirt on and get my old books out and pretend I was the teacher.
Oh,
I always wanted to be a school teacher. I never had any other thought, and possibly because my mother had two nieces who were school teachers, too, not up here, but in Minnesota.
Huh.
So It's interesting how your life can be, you know. So, and I enjoyed teaching. I enjoyed the places I was in. They were just little schools, but I loved them. And ESCA was a very interesting place. When I went up there, the miners at the had built the school, and territory supplied the material. The miners built the school, so they had a dance that night, and a lot of people came out from Anchorage, and they had an orchestra out, and that was my introduction to it. So I thought it was a pretty nice place. And then I got very lots of attention because I was the young teacher, and you know, there just weren't any young people in the community.
Meet a Pioneer is sponsored in part by the Forget-Me-Not Gift Shop. Sam and Jane McConkie believe beautiful things are timeless, and everything you find at the Forget-Me-Not shop is beautiful. Fine linen, silver, crystal, decorator items for your home or office, and that little something for special friends. Forget-Me-Not adds a feeling of luxury to even the most practical items. So, for beautiful things for years to come, for your friends, your home, or for yourself, remember the Forget-Me-Not Gift Shop, open 10 to 6, 6 days a week in Northgate Square. Alaska's spirit will never die. It lives on in second-generation Alaskans like Dr. Carol Davis of Denali Chiropractic Clinic.
Sponsoring Meet a Pioneer gives Carol an opportunity to show her pride in being an Alaskan and pride in being a member of the world's largest drugless healing profession. Becoming a chiropractor meant years of demanding study, a period of internship, and then meeting tough licensing standards. She's happy to talk about chiropractic with anyone interested in learning more about it. Just call 456-5252 or stop by and see Dr. Carol Davis at 1018 College Road on the east edge of Kramer's Field. Now back to our program, Meet a Pioneer.
Now, where is ESCA? E-S-K-A?
ESCA was a coal mining camp. It was out through the... You went by train from Anchorage through the Matanuska Valley, and it was up toward the mountains up there, and it was a coal mine, and they supplied coal. What they had started these mines for was the coal to supply mine to the battleships. Well, the ESCA coal was all right, and then I was transferred from there up to Chicoloon, because everybody from ESCA moved up to Chicoloon, but you probably never heard of and. The government built about a dozen very modern homes high on a hill. We climbed 80 steps up to get up to that hill. And then the office buildings, the recreation room, the mess hall were all down by the railroad tracks. So we ate. I was the teacher. And there were about 3 stenographers that lived, and they built these modern homes and furnished them. They were very lovely places, and but those girls had to walk down and up those steps every day, and I walked down and up to eat dinner at night, because I ate lunch at home and I had my school room. My school was in a house, which isn't a very good atmosphere for a school, you know. And I had about 12 kids, and all different grades.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And that must have been a challenge. You couldn't work with the whole group at one time all the time.
Oh, no, you didn't. You had to have your individual classes, you know. So it really was difficult. And I was always grateful when the exam came and those kids passed their exams, you know, from Juno. They were given, they sent out exams, you know, to give the children.
And that was to test whether they were able to pass into the next grade then?
Yes.
It took a standard test. Now, how did you happen to, now ESCA was your first teaching assignment, is that correct?
No, Perseverance was my first one. That's back of Juno.
Oh.
And then that was a rather interesting school. You started the day after 4th of July. They started a school year because in the winter time, it was right up in the mountains, and they were afraid of snowslides. So the people had to move, you know, away from there. So the children, and so then I started school the day after 4th of July. I taught until Christmas time. Then I went back and finished school in, about January, February, about March, and finished the year because they were afraid of snowslides. And that mine closed. Then the World War One came, and it closed that mine down because the English capital, and they just couldn't afford to maintain the mine any longer.
And that was in Perseverance?
Big Burn?
That was Perseverance?
Yeah, that's Perseverance.
And what were they mining there?
Gold.
I guess most places are.
Yeah. And to get home in the winter time, I would have to go down to the bottom of the mine, get in the cage and go down to the bottom of the mine, and they had the ore was loaded on the cars, dump cars, and they had a little steel car at the very end of them, and I rode in that because there was danger of rock falling, you know, as you went along in the train. And then I landed way at the top of a almost a mountain, and went down and sat on a little flat car and went. It was a cable car, and they let it down and landed down on the dock, and I'd pick the ferry up and go home across the bay in the ferry boat. It was a very interesting place.
And that was Perseverance?
Yeah, Perseverance.
You had to go through all that just to get to your school every day?
No, I stayed up there a week.
Oh, no. I can see that.
No, I never could have made it. No. And I had an apartment. They had a sort of an apartment house. It wasn't very nice, but then it was comfortable. But the school, it was a one-room school, and it was little. It was a nice little school. And
and so you had a little apartment, and you lived there for the week and went home to, where'd you go for the weekend then?
Douglas.
Oh, back to Douglas, yes. Where your family was.
Yes, uh-huh.
How much did you make there?
I made $100 a month, and I thought I was the richest person in the world.
Huh.
And then I went into ESCA, which is out from Anchorage. And they were just laying the streets in Anchorage when I went through there.
About what years around was that?
Oh, I see, about 1916, 18. Oh, probably 1919 or something like that.
And what was Anchorage like then?
A very little town, a very little place.
Just a few thousand people?
And they were just laying down the streets. When I got there.
Were there any cars or anything like that in Alaska then?
No, I don't.
No cars or trucks?
I don't think so. Uh-uh. No. And so I haven't been back to Anchorage for many years. I would never know it anymore. But when I taught up at the ESCA coal mines, I used to go in quite often and shop and come back out again, you know, at the same time. I'd go in like Friday afternoon and then come back about Monday morning, you know, so, but,
Well, you were in your, let's see, you graduated from normal school, you were about 20 years old or so?
Yeah, I was about 20.
And so you started teaching. Were there any rules for teachers, things you couldn't do, that sort of thing?
No, never heard of them. And L.D. Henderson he's a very, very handsome and a very nice man. He was a commissioner of education.
I wanted to get one other thing. When you were teaching school, I asked you the other day how you wore your hair.
Yeah. Oh. What did I tell you?
That long braid.
Yeah, uh-huh. That long. And then I used to wear it. Sometimes I'd divide the braid and wear it around my head, you know.
Wrapped up around your head.
Yeah.
You had long hair then, huh?
Uh-huh.
And you said something about lots of ribbons?
Huh? Oh, yeah. Yards of ribbon. And we had little the things that we put the ribbon through, you know, and held it in place and put it in the back of the head. Yeah.
What do you mean, a little thing you put the ribbon through?
Well, they were little, you know, like little hair deals, and they you put the ribbon in and closed it, just in it held the bow together. And
oh, what?
Yeah, oh, yeah. So, no, there were no rules.
They didn't tell you that
I never thought about teaching outside. There were no rules.
They didn't tell you that
you never thought about teaching outside. I know the supervisor at the normal school had a notice on the bulletin. She wanted to see me, and I thought, I wonder when she sees me. She wanted to know why I hadn't applied for a job. And I said, well, I have a job. She said, well, where is it? And I said, in Alaska. And when I told her I was going to make $100 a month, she said, I think I'll give up my supervisor job and move to Alaska. I always thought that was so funny.
No kidding. That was a lot of money then.
A lot of money in those days. The teacher didn't make that much money.
Wow. Did that include your apartment?
Big friend?
Did that include your little apartment?
No. I had to, and that was probably about $10 a month.
Oh, my gosh. Well, what did you wear when you conducted your class? How did you dress?
I wore, when I see people now with plaid pleated skirts, that's exactly what I wore. And I had a couple of jersey suits and blouses, and I had dresses, you know.
You never wore slacks then?
Oh, no, he didn't wear slacks.
How about the little girls, the little students? And when you were growing up,
they wore little wash dresses like little girls do now. Uh-huh.
Meet a Pioneer. KFAR Radio is proud of this show, and we're proud of our sponsors. Take it from Ag Baba, folks. One of the greatest pleasure trips you'll ever take is a trip up the Chena and Tanana Rivers aboard the riverboat Discovery. It's scenic, it's fun, it's a little adventure back into Alaska's past, a real riverboating adventure, guided and informed by lifetime Pioneer Alaskans, the Binkley family. The Binkleys, three generations of riverboat captains on Alaskan waters whose knowledge and love of Alaska is unsurpassed. Try the Riverboat Discovery, and when your trip is complete, you'll feel like we do here at KFAR. It's a joy to speak of the Riverboat Discovery, and it's a pleasure to do business with the Binkleys.
Meet a Pioneer is about Alaskan pioneers and the history of our last frontier. And Last Frontier Realty celebrates the past and its link to our future. You're invited to visit their office at the corner of Airport and Barnett, an original Fairbanks home completely restored, including archival photographs of the interior. On the Last Frontier Realty staff are some of the most effective salespeople in Fairbanks. They employ the most up-to-date marketing plans that work for you. And don't you enjoy their friendly messages on their sign outside? Please stop by and visit Last Frontier Realty, proud of our history and proud to sponsor Meet a Pioneer.
During those times when you were teaching, did you date young men or go out?
Oh, yes, I did, but I wasn't too interested. You know, I never was that. And
What'd you do on a date if a fellow did take you, or did you date then in the sense of him picking you up and going somewhere?
Oh, yes, I used to have boyfriends, you know.
What did you do? Was there a movie house or?
There was movies and there were dances. And then at Treadwell, of course, was a wonderful camp. It had everything. It had this big swimming pool. We went swimming. Oh, that was a wonderful big. I'm going to give you that book and you can read it. It's a book about Treadwell. That was Treadwell Mine.
Oh, I would love to. I've heard much about that.
Yeah.
Of course, that's a very famous mine, Alaska.
Very, very. The biggest mine in the world. And you know, what happened was that, you see, it was extended out underneath the channel, and they got greedy and dug mine too near the surface, and the water broke through, and that ended it.
The whole thing? They couldn't fix it or dig another tunnel or anything like that?
No. And that book tells all about it.
Did that put your father out of work?
That's where my father worked. He worked at the refinery where they made the gold and the bricks at that time. But then that put my father out of work. It put everybody out. There was no work. It was out over that. It's interesting. That book tells it.
And what'd your dad do then?
Well, then he and my mother went outside. My sister was ill, and mother felt that they should go out. So mother and he moved out. And I've always been sorry, because I think they never were very happy outside. They were married in Sitka, and they'd lived in Alaska so many years. And I've always felt badly about that.
But where did they move?
They went to Seattle.
Oh, Seattle, huh? Did he work and find another job or something?
No, Dad didn't. Well, during the war years, then, he did. He was a watchman on the docks. They had to have people watching, you know, and he did that. But he never worked after that.
During the war years, World War II?
Yeah. Yeah. What was it, World War II? Yes, I guess it'd be World War II, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And when my husband was in the legislature, I went over to Douglas several times, but where we had lived, the house had been torn down and the whole thing had been changed, you know. Everything changes, of course, nothing stays the same.
Well, you taught for how many years before you got married?
I taught 4 years.
And what's the story? How'd you happen to get married to Dixie Hall? How did Miss Oliver, were you called Miss Oliver?
Yeah.
How did Miss Oliver happen to meet Dixie Hall?
Dixie Hall. How did I happen to meet Dixie Hall? Well, I just met him.
Now, where? Where was this?
He thought he was smart. I didn't like him very well. It's funny, isn't it? And I had lots of men friends, you know, and the people never minded, because, you know, we all lived very close together there and everything. So I had lots of attention. But, and you know, Dixie Hall was entirely different than anybody I'd ever known. And I often think of that. The other man was an older man, and he had lots of money, and he wanted to marry me. And I know I had this friend that worked in the office, and he said to me, "Esther, you're crazy. Why don't you marry Terry?" I said, "Well, I don't want to get married to anybody." And then I turned around and married Dixie Hall. And he was a very outgoing man. He was clerk of the court here for many years. And everybody knew Dixie.
Well, tell me the story about you crossing the log.
Well, you see, we had to cross this creek, and you had to get on the log. And so my feet slipped, and down I went.
You were wearing a skirt and everything, huh?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Laughed, and I was so mad at him. I thought, well, you dope, you know, sitting there and laugh at me.
Wait, where were you, on a way to a picnic or something or other?
Yeah, we were going on a picnic.
The two of you?
No, there were several people.
Oh, a group? Uh-huh.
They'd got one across. I was the last one to go, because I wasn't very...
Oh, you weren't dating him yet. He just laughed at you.
I didn't even like him. I thought, you dope, you sitting there and laugh at me. He thought that was the funniest thing he'd seen when I fell in the creek.
Well, what was it about him that attracted you? He had quite a personality, huh?
Big man?
His personality was... very attractive?
Well, it was. It was. He was very well-liked.
Was he funny?
And he was well-liked here in Fairbanks, too. But
was he funny? Did he have a sense of humor?
Huh?
Was he funny?
Yeah, he was. He was. Yeah.
Well, when he proposed, did you say yes, or how long did you date?
Oh, yes, I was ready to marry. I felt quite flattered to think he'd want me, you know. Of course, as I say, in a way, I know this one friend said, oh, yes, you're crazy. He said, Terry's got lots of money. He said, Dixie doesn't have. I said, I don't care. I'm going to marry Dixie anyway. So I did.
20 years ago, Mount McKinley Bank was founded by a group of forward-looking individuals who saw a need in the community. The new bank offered low-interest loans to encourage new home building in the Fairbanks area. It was an immediate success. Today, Mount McKinley Mutual Savings Bank is still located at 530 4th Avenue in the same building where founder Julian Rice and first president Judge Vernon Forbes served on the first board of trustees. The bank has seen a lot of history, and their solid background of investment and involvement in the community has earned Mount McKinley their own place in Fairbanks history. Mount McKinley Mutual Savings Bank is proud to sponsor Meet a Pioneer. At Mount McKinley, they're looking forward to a future as proud as their past.
You're in tune to KFAR Radio 66, and now back to Meet a Pioneer with Esther Hall.
And they were very nice to me there. Oh, they did so many nice things. I remember the one year that I was there, I don't know, it was my birthday or something, and they had a great big dinner, and they got beautiful fresh flowers out from town for the table and everything, you know. So I was kind of spoiled, too, you know. I had lots of attention, which I never expected to have, because, you know, I had a brother, and, of course, he made my life miserable because my feet were so big. And, oh, you know, he'd say, you know, Esther, it's a funniest thing. Everybody knows when you're coming because here your feet come a long time before you get the, all these awful things. So I was so conscious of my big feet, and I'm still conscious of my big feet.
Oh, gee. Okay. So you met Dixie at ESCA, and what in the world was he doing there?
Well, he worked at the office, and he kept time, you know, all the time for all the men, and made out the payrolls. And finally, he said to one of the men, he said, you know, this is ridiculous. I have no more idea why I'm doing these things because I don't know anything about mining. So this Terry McGowan that I was going with at that time said, he was a foreman. He said, Dix, I'll give you a job in the mine. So Dix went into the mine so he could find out what he was doing, you know.
Really?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And then, as I say, Terry, well, I used to have lots of, but we all just had a good time, you know. I'd try to make a cake. I don't know how he'd ate some of the cake I made. And then we'd have coffee and cake in the evening time, you know. And you had to be awfully careful what to do. Now, I never pull down a shade or anything, so if the neighbors wanted to look in my window, they, you know, you just have to be awfully careful because it creates a lot of problems sometimes. So I did, because there was nothing. We just sit around and talk and have coffee and, you know, that's all. So
you married in 1922.
Mm-hmm.
So you were about 24. Mm-hmm. Dixie was about 6 years older than you. He's about 30.
30. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So you married in Anchorage. Why didn't you marry in Douglas, where your family was?
Well, my mother wanted me to go home, but I was teaching, you know, and I just didn't want to take time off to do it. So I said, well, we'll get married, and then, you know.
How long did you go together before you married?
Be friends?
How long did you go together before you were married?
Oh, we went about 2 years.
Uh-huh. And then you went and made a home back to Chickaloon?
Yeah. Well, he went to work for the Northern Commercial Company, and they sent him down. Well, first he was in the store at Nenana, and then they sent him to Bethel.
Oh, he joined the NC Company and then got moved around different places.
That's what they did. They had stores all over the territory.
So he started in Nenana and then got transferred to Bethel. And what years were those?
Well, let's see. Robert was just a... The boys were very little boys when we first went down there. Isn't that funny? I can't think. My older son now is almost 60 years old.
Yeah, we're going quite a ways back. I want you to tell me
back that far.
Now you tell me exactly what day and what day of the month and what year you got to know. Boys' names?
What are their names? John V., John Barbie Hall is my older son, and Robert Lee Hall is my younger son.
How far apart in age are they?
2 years.
Mm-hmm. And so you moved to Bethel, and how long were you in Bethel?
We were at Bethel for, I think, 4 years.
Mm-hmm. And then Dixie
came in here and was in the marshal's office first, and then he went into the clerk of the court's office, and he worked there until he retired.
Then how did he happen to get into the marshal's?
Well, the Democrats came in power, and he was a good Democrat. And Tony Diamond, who was the our representative in Washington, D.C., came down to Bethel and talked to Dix and asked him if he'd like to have a job. Dix said yes. He thought it was time to get the boys out of Bethel, see? And so he said yes. And so Tony said, well, there's a job. There's a job in the marshal's office. So that's how he happened to get there.
And what was the job? What did he do?
Well, he worked at that time, he was just a regular marshal. I mean, but he didn't, if there was some need for him to be called out, why, he was called out to arrest people, see.
Oh, he was a law enforcement officer. Did he wear a uniform?
Yeah, but in the clerk of the court's office, of course, it was all in the courtroom.
When he was a marshal, did he wear a uniform?
No, they didn't wear uniforms. They just wore regular dress clothes, that's all.
Huh, so he had the power to arrest and...
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Were there many marshals in town at the time?
No, but there wasn't much crime went on either.
There's just one or two then.
It isn't like it is now. And there weren't many cars, you know.
There probably weren't any paved streets when you moved here, were there?
Why, no. No, Christian Street wasn't paved. We lived on that and dusty, and the NC used to lay pipes on the top of the ground so people could have water, and every morning Dixie got up about 5 o'clock and sprinkled the front of the house and the street, Cushman Street, and then we lived on the corner of 10th and Cushman, and then he'd come home at noon and do the Cushman. You had to, or you couldn't exist. Your house would get so dirty on the outside, then he'd wash it off, you know. It was just plain old dust that was on.
You mean he'd water down the street?
Yes, water down the street.
And what was...
Had an old Model A ourselves. We were so thrilled, this old Model A. We had the best time with it, you know. We camped and everything else. We loved camping. We used to go camping every weekend in the summertime.
You just set up camp? We're in what area?
We had a tent. We used to pitch the tent. Well, most times we just slept out.
You'd go fishing and that sort of thing?
Yeah. Fish, if there was fishing, yeah.
Now, after you married, you stopped teaching.
Yes, I never taught after I was married. Uh-huh. Dixie didn't want me to, so I didn't. And he was on the school board for many years, too. So he wouldn't give his wife a job. Uh-huh. People might talk.
Uh-huh. Well, what did you do? You had a couple of children you were raising, and...
Yeah, and you kept house. You had to do all your own housework, washing and ironing and...
Washing by hand?
No, I had a machine.
Oh, you had a machine. Huh?
Yeah, no, I never did. I did when I was first married. I washed by hand. We went to Nenana, you know, and he was keeping time on that big bridge that was built down there and had charge of the supplies for it. And... Oh, I'll never forget the first washing I did by hand, and I thought, I don't know, I think I'll go back to school teaching. And I put it out on the line, and the darn line broke, and it was over the potato patch, and it got all muddy and dirty, and I had to do it all over again. I thought, I don't think I want to stay married. I think I'll just quit and go back to school teaching.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, gee, how discouraging.
It was discouraging. Huh. I didn't know how much in love I was.
When Roy Larson started Larson's Jewelers on that day back in 1946, he had big dreams of what he'd like his business to become. Over the years, some of those dreams changed and others came true. Today, Larson's is still a family-owned business and one of the finest and most complete jewelry stores in the interior. Almost 40 years of skill and experience go into everything they do. Like Fairbanks, they've grown, but they're still your friend and neighbor. Larson's, fine jeweler since 1946 at 405 Noble.
When you moved to Fairbanks, did you move right into your little white log house on 10th and Cushman?
No, we moved into a two-story house just up the road, up the street. The house doesn't stand there anymore. Our house is gone, too, of course. And I always think there were two little girls across the street. And I had known their mother. Their mother's father was a doctor, Dr. Romy. And Elizabeth lived across the street from me. And these two little kids had put their father's undershirts on. And here they come every day to play my piano. The kids. Little. I often think of that. I think one of them is a professor out here at the college or has been. And I often thought about that.
Here they
come across the street in their father's undershirts, you know, each one. And Elizabeth didn't care. She was a doctor's daughter that delivered my children, and I tell you, they were the funniest little kids, and they'd sit and play that piano, you know, and they'd drum, you know how kids play the piano. Oh, dear.
Did you belong to clubs or any community service groups? Or?
Yes, I did. I belonged to PEO, Sisterhood, and I belonged to, the Historical Society, and what else did I belong to? Several other things that I can't remember now, but I haven't gone for several years. Since I've had bad legs, I haven't done anything. Mm-hmm. Now, Marge Hagnall, of course, she belongs to all of them, so she gives me the load on all of them.
Tell me a little bit more about Fairbanks in those early years.
Well, life was very simple, and It was nice, though, and we had fun when we went to dances. You knew everybody, you know, and you dressed up, you know, you had evening clothes, and you dressed up and went to the dances, and dinners, certain dinners, too, you did, and people gave dinners and entertained a lot in their homes in those years.
Oh, rather than go out to a restaurant, it was more in-home.
Yes, and now they go out to restaurants, but they didn't in those years. You cooked dinner and had company, you know.
Were there really many places to go then?
No, I think the old Model Cafe was about the most important one.
Sure, yeah. The Model Cafe, of course.
Okay, you betcha. Yeah.
And, of course, you went to the Empress Theater.
Yeah, big one.
The Empress Theater.
Yeah, so... And you know, in those years, I forget which group of women, I guess it was the college women, you would bring these artists in from the outside, and we had some very good ones, but the one I think that stand out, this young woman and man, and you know that fellow, that man came out on the stage, and he was drunk, and he almost fell off the stage. And they had to call for, is there a doctor in the house? And I guess the doctor was there. And the girl finished the concert, but I'll never forget that one.
Okay. Who was the guy?
I don't know, some well-known singer that they had paid to come up here, some opera singer.
No kidding.
And drunk. And you know, it was crazy. Everybody realized the minute he stepped out on the, he staggered around the stage. And that was the funniest thing I ever saw.
Oh,
everybody was just flabbergasted. They couldn't believe it. So that was one thing that happened in Fairbanks. But the college women finally cut that out. They don't have that anymore.
How did the World War II years affect your life in town? I've heard stories from some of the other people I've talked to about having to walk patrol up and down the streets, make sure lights weren't showing.
Yes, I did too. Mm-hmm. I did that in my block too.
Oh.
I walked the streets, and of course, here I had
a husband and two sons, and they used to laugh about mother. Mother, you know, they were safe at home, you know, and here I was. And if you saw the tiniest bit of light, you knocked on the door and said, you'll have to cover that up. And we had shades and things on our windows. It couldn't be a light show.
Because at that time you were fearful of an attack.
Yes, that's right. You betcha.
And you really were afraid. I mean, we look back now and we know it didn't happen, but you had every reason to think it might.
Well, I can tell you right now, I think sometime of Russia right now, if they, you know, and of course they have patrols and everything down there, you know, across from Asia too. But I think that. I think the Russians, we'd be the first people they would attack right here.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Well, especially now. You know, we got two big military bases here.
That's right. And, you know, with these awful weapons nowadays, I don't think anybody would survive.
Mm-hmm. Were your boys old enough to go into the military then?
Robert went in the Navy. Barbara could not get in because his eyesight wasn't good enough, so he went into the Merchant Marine, which wasn't considered right, but then it was something. At least they had to have somebody on the ships, and he worked as a fireman down in the hold, but they wouldn't accept him because his eyesight wasn't good enough.
Was this during the war years?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So you did have at least one boy in the regular military, the Navy.
Navy. Uh-huh.
Did you worry a lot? Did you worry about him?
Well, yes, I did, but then nothing happened, you know, and so, yeah.
Huh.
I hope we never have another one. If it have another one, it'll be the end of all of us, I think.
Did you get to know any of the Russian people that were here during that time? And what impact did you see?
They paid very much to themselves. You see, what happened was, that they flew the planes in here, and the Russians came this far to pick them up. And I know we had this young chap that we'd known since he was a little boy in Enana when we lived down there. And he was a pilot, and he used to bring those planes in, you know. And he was a leader for those planes. And he said that's all those Russians cared about. They didn't care about anything, but they cared about the stuff that was in that, the weapons that were in that plane. That's what they were interested in.
Do you recall?
We supplied them with a lot of weapons. They bought out stores. They, like the jewelry stores, they bought anything they could get their hands on to take back. Anything.
Who were some of your closest friends in your early years in Fairbanks?
Well, for one thing, I was very close to Dr. Dick and his wife, and they had two children. And he was a very good doctor, and she had been a nurse. And that's how she met Dick at the hospital, and they were married. And they had two children. And those children were just like our children. They'd come and stay days, you know. Well, they'd come over, when Caroline was just a little, and she lives in Anchorage now, Caroline. And no, Dick lives in Anchorage. Caroline lives here. And when she was a little girl, she'd get on the phone. She'd climb up on a chair and get on the telephone. And she'd call up Dickie. She'd say, Dickie, bring me some dry pants. I'll wet my pants. And she was this little tiny kid.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. All these kids. And here they are, grown-up people with their grown-up children now. Caroline had two children. And Dick had three children. He lives in Anchorage. He has a very good position. He was very well educated. He went east to some big college, but Caroline was never much of a student. She wasn't interested. Yeah.
What was the first names of Dr. Dick?
Dr. Dick. Noble Dick.
Oh, no, I haven't heard that name before.
Yeah, Dr. Noble Dick. He was an eye, ear, nose, and throat man. A very good.
What was his wife's name?
Sheik. Well, say Eleanor, but we call her Sheik.
Sheik?
Because her name was Miss Sheiky.
Oh, her maiden name before she married?
Yeah.
They stay in touch.
Well, they finally went to California, and then Dr. Dick died. Dick died, and she used to come up, but she's gotten older, too, and she doesn't travel like she used to, so... But I call her up once in a while. We have chat on the phone. And we were very close. We were very good friends. And when after Dick died, I used to go down there sometimes and stay for a couple of months with her. But, you know, I haven't gone out because when you can't get around, I might just as well stay home.
Mm-hmm.
But I used to go out every other year after I came in here. In fact, I came in here very ill and never expected to stay here. I thought, well, when I get better. But the longer I stayed, the better. Eli Siders, that was a pretty nice place to stay.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I happened to land. I was ill, and the doctor, Dr. Rebar, just said, I'm going to send you to Pioneer Home to that hospital park. There, you'll get better care there than you will here at this place. So that's how I ever come in here.
What was it called that he was doing?
What was what?
What Dix was doing? He was a court clerk?
Yes, he was clerk of the district court.
Uh-huh.
And they take care of all the court. Well, it's all the business is in the court. And he had, he had two or three girls that worked in there. He started with just one girl, and then the town grew, and there were more courts and businesses by.
And where did he work out of?
Big Print.
What building did he work in?
In the federal building. He had an office there.
He must have been one of the first to move in there then.
Yeah, he was. And it's funny, you know, Dick always told me he didn't think one's wife should come to the office. So I rarely ever went to the office. And when I needed money, instead of going up to Dick's, I'd go over to Dave Adler and say, Dave, let me have $5 to collect for my husband when he comes in. And he used to make Dick mad, but I don't care. I got mad, too, when he said he didn't believe in a wife coming to the office.
And you didn't agree.
So I just thought, well, I wouldn't go.
But you would have liked to have gone.
Oh, not necessarily, but then, sure, I'd have gone. But when I needed money, I could have gone up, but I thought, nice, I should go to Dave. I said, Dave, let me have some money. And Dave Adler was quite a character. So he'd get me some money, and I'd go to do my shopping and go home.
Dave Adler ran the bookstore?
Dave had he and Benji. Benji was a high school teacher here, and they had a nice little bookshop here. Very nice bookshop. I don't think is Benji living? Yes, Benji's still living. Dave died, but Benji's still living.
Now, Don Adler is the one who played the organ?
Big pun?
Don Adler was the organ player?
His brother, Don Adler, played the organ. Yeah, Fairbanks was, a nice little town at that time. It's hard to believe what's happened to it now.
The Avenue was kind of out of town here when you first moved here.
That's right. It was. It was right at the... Well, there were some gardens right past us, and then there were trees, there were woods. Because I know, as I say, Varb used to like to build tree houses. And so he... Mildred said to me, aren't you afraid, Esther, the bears might come? And bears never came into town. And she didn't want her kids to go. But the bears never got Varb, so... But he... And he used to like to build tree houses.
Now, who's Barb?
My son, John B. Hall.
Oh, you called him Barb.
Barbie.
Uh-huh. Did he ever go by John?
But after he got old enough himself, he was called John. The people that he worked with called him John. They didn't call him Barbie.
Oh, when he was little,
he
was Barbie.
Liked that name very well, but then that was his father's name. And I thought since he was the older son, he should have he should have his father's name.
Mm-hmm. What did a woman, let's say you had decided to keep on teaching, how would you have accommodated the child care?
You know, that's the trouble. I had children, but a lot of them have children. But I just felt like I needed to be home with my family. I thought they needed their mother at home.
What would you have done? Hired a babysitter or something?
Yeah, then your children would be with a babysitter all the time. And I didn't want that.
After they grew up and they were, say, teenagers, did you ever consider going back to teaching then?
I did some, but then I didn't, because I felt by that time I'd been out of it too long, I'd have to go back to school again to take a course. Because, school education changed too, just like everything else in the world. And I didn't keep on teaching, but, I just had enough to do at home, that I thought I should be home. But if I think I had to do it again, I would have kept on teaching. Oh, I didn't, and I won't come back to do it, so.
Alaskans have always been famous for their hospitality, the same wonderful hospitality you still find at the Two Rivers Lodge, where Don and Stasha Troutman offer the best menu and interior, a comfortable, quiet atmosphere, and that famous Alaskan welcome to the people who are today's history makers. If you've been meaning to try one of the most talked about dining experiences in the Alaskan interior, don't wait any longer. Go out tonight to the Two Rivers Lodge, 16 Mile Chena Hot Springs Road.
You're listening to Meet a Pioneer with my guest, Esther Hall. This is a tape of an interview taken yesterday at the Pioneer's home. We're in our last couple of minutes. I asked Esther what she remembered about the 4th Avenue line.
Frankly, nobody paid any attention to it. I mean, we knew it was a line. And, of course, I had grown up in a town of Douglas where when we were kids, we used to stand up on the top of the hill and the line was down on the dock and we'd throw our rocks down on the top of their houses and they'd come out and give us the dickens. Of course our mother didn't know. But we'd throw rocks on the top of their house and they'd come running out and they'd be so mad and we thought that was the funniest thing. Then we'd run as fast as we could,
Am I going to hurt this if I put my foot on it? Is that all right?
Pardon?
Is this okay if I put my foot there?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Sure.
You were here then when the first school burned down.
No, it had just burned when we didn't see it burn.
I see.
No.
So this current
school around the different buildings when my children came.
Oh, you arrived just after that fire then.
Around the different buildings, and they'd go to different places to school.
Huh. Yeah. So your children were in the first group that went to that main school now.
Yes, that new main school, yeah.
Well, that was the big building at the end of the day.
I always remember there was a Mrs. Hess lived across the street. Mrs. Hess, she was a regent on the board.
Mrs. Luther Hess?
Yes. Uh-huh. And she used to say, oh, isn't that wonderful? That'll do Fairbanks for many years to come. Well, she never lived to see how Fairbanks grew, So. And it was funny, each year she planted her flowers, and she planted them just so. It made you think of Mrs. Les Hess, because in her house, she always pulled her shades down because she didn't want the carpets to fade, that sort of thing. But I always laugh when I think about that bed of flowers. Everything was just perfect, measured off just right, and she never thought about them putting them in. If I planted flowers, I just planted them, and they're higgly piggly. But Mrs. Hess had been one of the first teachers here, and she was a very refined lady, very nice lady.
Are you glad you spent all your life in Alaska?
Yes, I am. I never had any desire to live outside because I was born here, and I grew up here. And when I went to had a chance to go to school out there, so I enjoyed that. And I always wanted to be a teacher from the time I was a little girl. So Well, of course, I always enjoyed school. I enjoyed going to school. And I enjoyed teaching. But I also enjoyed being married, too, and married to my husband. And I enjoyed him. And he enjoyed me, I hope.
You've been listening to Meet a Pioneer. A taped version of this interview will become a part of the permanent oral history collection of the Alaskan Polar Regions Department at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. This program was produced by Gail Malloy.
It measured 4.3 on the Richter scale, no injuries, and no structural damage. A big, big day on Wall Street today. The Dow Jones average of 30 industrials up over 15 points, volume 107 million shares. This is ABC News.
My mom gets so mad at me if I buy her expensive gifts. She says it's the thought that counts. So last Mother's Day, I told her I had 48 gifts in one box for her. She really started to get mad. And then I gave her the gift, a Whitman sampler with 48 pieces of delicious candy inside. Boy, did I make a hit. She's always loved the Whitman sampler ever since she was a little girl. It is the thought that counts. And this Mother's Day, I'm going to keep the good thought going.
For the ABC Information Network, I'm Roger Skibbenis.
This is Keith Morris of Sports Illustrated. My guest, the pitching coach of the New York Mets, Mel Stottlemyre. And Mel, the 1985 season, experts say the Mets are going to do well, but they're maybe one pitcher away. What do you feel?
Well, actually, Keith, I think everybody is picking us, and I think we have to do the job on the field. I'm not too concerned about the pitching staff. I felt real good about the nine that we took out of spring training, and we feel like we got some adequate replacements if necessary pitching for us at Tidewater. I think people maybe have a tendency to underestimate our pitching as a whole. We certainly had, you know, Dwight Gooden, who stands out, and Ronnie Darling. People are concerned about him, but I'm not. I think Ronnie's going to have a very good year for us. Sid Fernandez didn't pitch as well in spring training. We had to send him back to Tidewater. Hopefully he'll find himself down there, but overall, I'm real pleased with the pitching depth that the Mets have.
Dwight Gooden, everybody.